5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
What are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sheriff, see ya!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here, everyone, on a Monday. Hope everyone enjoyed the show from yesterday. I was talking with Randy Harrington. And Randy, I want to thank you for being on the show. Really appreciated hearing your stories and the encounters that you've had. I know some of the audience was saying they were having a hard time hearing Randy. I'll take the blame for that. It's tough sometimes. You know, I try to pride myself on getting better audio out there for the show. I know some shows, when you listen to them, it sounds like they're in a basement, or it sounds like there's static in the background or rain in the background. And, you know, I try and have it be an environment where it's a better audio sound, but sometimes that doesn't work out, and that's the way it goes sometimes. It's only as good as a cell phone on the other end. You know, for those out there who had a hard time hearing Randy, I apologize to Randy and to the listeners. Hope tonight makes up for it. Got a great show planned for you. You know, on the blog today, I posted this audio file. It's a 12-minute audio file by a researcher by the name of Randy Savage. Randy did a great job getting this audio, and sometimes the audio, like the show, sometimes the audio doesn't come through as clear as you'd like it. There's other things that can affect the audio when you're trying to capture some of these sounds that you're hearing. I want to play a small clip from it. There's a portion of the audio, and if you go to SasquatchChronicles.com, you can listen to it. It's under Possible Sasquatch Sounds. It's on the blog today. And you can listen to all of the audio. It's 12 minutes, but there's a portion of the audio. Try and click it about at the 10-minute mark and really listen in the background. And what you're going to hear, well, one of the things you're going to hear is rain. And I tried to clean up the audio. I tried to level it out and bring up the noises in the background and bring down the rain, but it was too tough with the audio file I had. It didn't sound right when I tried to clean it up. When you hear the noises, listen very closely, maybe throw on some headphones, listen really closely to the background, and you'll hear something. It sounds like it's chattering. It sounds like it's arguing. It's a real strange noise. And the moment I heard it, I recognized it, because when I was out in Texas with Mo and Tim Sermons and Bob Garrett, we would hear this type of noise. We'd be the only ones out there. We'd be in the middle of nowhere, and then you'd hear this weird, sounds like a chimpanzee or something, trying to talk in the background, and it kind of has a higher pitch. Well, let me play it for you.
Yeah.
Did you hear it? Did you hear the strange noise in the background? And if you didn't, go to SasquatchChronicles.com and just try and play it from there if it didn't come through on the show. But in the background, you'll hear this weird chatter, and that's what we heard out in Texas. You'd hear like two or three, it sounds like creatures, just mumbling, chatter. Just sounds really, really odd. Sounds really, really strange. But I want to thank Randy Savage. I mean, it's tough to get good audio, and I've been looking around on YouTube, and he's got some good stuff out there, so I really appreciate it. And I hope it came through on the show. I hope you can hear what I was describing in that piece of audio. You know, I'm looking into this report I just got late last night out of East Texas, and it's from two hunters. They were out hunting a while back. What the hunters describe, and I quote, "A hog came running out of the bush, running for its life. What followed it appeared to be two large chimpanzees chasing down this hog. And these two hunters were so thrown off by it, they describe it as overgrown chimpanzees chasing down this hog, and they lost sight of it for about 6 or 7 seconds. They see this hog come out of the bush, take off running, and then they see two large chimpanzees go chasing after it. These hunters really aren't into Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Sent a message to one of them last night, and he said, "I don't know if this is what you guys call Bigfoot or Sasquatch, but these two chimpanzees, as he calls them, he said they were about 6.5, 7 feet tall. He said they weren't a monstrous size running out. You know, they weren't 9, 10 feet tall chimps. He said what it appeared to be is 6.5, maybe 7 feet tall chimpanzees. And it was like a flash. They just caught them, and they were chasing after this hog. And they were chasing after them on 2 feet. And he said it appeared to be they had no problems running on 2 feet. And he said, I don't know. He goes, it kind of looked like a chimpanzee. He goes, that's the only way I can describe it, is it appeared to be two very large, tall chimpanzees chasing down this hog out in the forest. So it's something I'm looking into. And I thought it was appropriate to bring that up tonight. When you hear James talk about his encounter with one of these things, he describes it a little bit like a chimpanzee too. He goes into descriptions on what he saw and what he shot, but the biggest thing that came to his mind was a chimpanzee. One thing interesting about James is, you know, he had this encounter a while back. For the longest time, he had no clue what he had run into. He never really talked about it with anyone, hasn't really talked to family or friends about it. Sometimes when he brings it up, it's very, he tells portions of it, but he's very uncomfortable talking about what happened to him with this encounter. And for the longest time, he had no clue what he actually ran into. Up until recently, he realized what he had ran into that day. It's a very, very interesting encounter. James actually lives out there in southeast Oklahoma. He's got a large property, and some interesting things have been happening around his property he's going to talk about tonight. But let's get into his main encounter. James, welcome to the show. You know, I really appreciate you being here tonight. I know how tough it is for you to talk about this. So I really do appreciate you being here tonight.
Thanks, Wes. Glad to come on.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you're here. I was so fascinated with your encounter the other day. I'm really glad that you came forward to talk about it. You know, a lot of people, when they have an encounter like yours, and I've heard a lot of them behind the scenes, but rarely do you get people like that to come forward. I think because most people believe, you know, they think that most people won't believe them, but there's
right.
So much to your story and so much to in the details. Will you take us back to that day, explain what you were doing, and then kind of walk us into the encounter? And if you can, just kind of be as detailed as you can from what you remember.
Okay. All right. Well, it was the Friday after Thanksgiving, 1997, it was just tradition that I go to the lake area that we had a cabin at for deer season, and it started Thanksgiving Day in Oklahoma. And so I'd go on Friday, and it was Friday. I'd driven down, gone to the cabin, went out, and there's a power line easement that I generally hunted, you know. And it was on the side of, well, what we call a mountain. It's not really a mountain. It's just a ridge, a high ridge. And I went out. I parked the truck down by the road on the end of this easement, and we'd catch deer crossing over, and they'd started feeding on acorns. And so I set up in the corner because the easement runs north and south, and in the corner that I would hunt, it would cut back west. And so I was sitting right in the corner so I could look west, and then I could look north downhill. And I got out there, I don't know, 11 noon. I got out kind of late. And I sat and just, you know, waited in the corner, you know. There was some odd noises that I'd heard, but I just kind of checked them all off, you know, just weird whistles, odd sounding birds that I'd heard throughout the day, and didn't really think nothing of it. And finally, it was getting to be 4 o'clock or so, and I was just tired of sitting there. I didn't think of them seeing me. So I got up and started walking back to the truck, and I can see the truck. It's about, probably parked a couple hundred yards from where I left the truck. And I was walking back, and I probably got about halfway to the truck. And suddenly I see, kind of at a 45-degree angle across, I'm walking the south side of the power line easement, kind of up against the trees. And on the south side of me, or north side of me, at about a 45-degree angle, I see some movement. And then I see something moving, and then the next thing I know, a rock hit me dead center of the chest, about the size of a baseball. And this thing came in with a lot of force. And right just about the second that it hit me, this thing just screams. There's no roar, just a loud scream, extremely loud. And of course, I look and I can see it. It's 20 or 30 yards into the trees, and it's running towards me. And it gets to the edge of the trees, kind of throws out its right arm and hooks the tree and starts running back into the woods. But it's still screaming. And then I'm shaking so bad, I end up take a step forward. I drop my rifle. I trip over my rifle. I break it. I broke the scope off of it. I finally get it together enough that I get it up, and I'm shaking. And I'm shaking now, again, talking about it. And I'm trying to get to the truck. It's all I can do to go. You know, it's like my body's half paralyzed. As I get to my truck, I lay the rifle and the scope in the back. Well, I didn't really lay it, just kind of chucked it. And I always left my keys in the bed of my truck because one time I lost them while I was hunting. They fell out of my pocket, and I had to walk back out and dig through the leaves and find them. But I left them in the back of the truck. Well, I got my keys. I'm fumbling through the door trying to get it unlocked. I dropped the keys, and I kind of half-ass fall down trying to get the keys. And as I get the keys, the next thing I know, the truck is moving. And I look up, and I'm kind of down on one knee on my side, and this thing comes up over the side of the truck. The one hand on the driver's side rail of the bed, and, you know, his body's just up on the bed of the truck, and he's screaming at me. Well, I always carried a little .22 Magnum, an H&R, in a shoulder holster that I used to dispatch, if I ever needed it, to, you know, dispatch a deer that was maybe wounded. You know, it was just simple, it's easy, headshot. Well, I was able to get it pulled out. I got it pulled out, and I come around, and I fired it and shot right above its left eye, on the left side of the face. And as I did, it lets out a scream, and then off of the truck, blazing through the woods, screaming. It sounded like buffalo or elephants that, you know, just tromping, just screaming through the forest. And I was able to, at that point, still real shaken, get in the truck, get it started, and down the hill I go. I'm headed down the hill, and there's a creek at the bottom of the road. And right as I get on the bridge of the creek, the truck there's a big bang, the truck rocks. I just kind of keep going, and I look back in the rearview mirror, and there was a boulder about the size of a soccer ball laying in the middle of the road that wasn't there when I crossed the bridge. Well, I was actually kind of laying out on the bridge. I wouldn't have been able to drive over it with my truck. I probably would have bottomed out, or it would have hit the bottom of the truck. It was that size. So I know it wasn't there before I went across the bridge. And then as I was on the bridge, you know, I'm assuming that it threw this rock and hit the truck, and I didn't see where the rock came from. I went home. I didn't sleep. It was about a half mile to the cabin. And the next day, my dad came out, and then I didn't hunt. I got up the next morning and just packed up and went back to town. I told my dad I wasn't feeling well and I wasn't going to hunt. You know, and you're the first person I've ever told the whole thing to, you know. I've told people that I've seen them, you know, and just kind of get that weird look, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. When it first threw the rock at you and you saw it coming out of the brush, what did you think it was? I mean, did you get a good, I know you got a good look at it when you shot it, and we can talk about that here in a second, but
I had no idea. This was so far out of the realm of what was in my head. I had no idea, you know. It was kind of like wild man, holy crap, you know. There was no idea of what it was I was looking at or seeing. I just knew that this ain't normal. You know, this is just, I wasn't thinking Bigfoot, you know, or Sasquatch. I'd seen the film, the Gimlin film when I was a kid, but I always thought there was one in the world. There's just one out in California that they filmed, you know. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought something like this. And I had no idea for the longest time what it was that I saw. And I think that that's why I really never told anybody what I had seen, you know?
Yeah.
And, it was a long time before I kind of put the two and two together. And, you know, it wasn't the, 9-10 foot tall monster. It was about 7 foot. It had the big body. It had a large, way larger body than an average human. I'm 6'2", 240. And he was a lot bigger than me, but he wasn't anything that I'd ever heard described before, you know. And Wes, I had no idea what it was I was seeing. This was the wildest thing I'd ever seen in my life, you know. My heart's racing now.
Yeah.
Just thinking about it, you know.
Yeah, you always relive it. What time of day was this?
It was around 4:30 in the afternoon. It wasn't quite sunset yet, you know. It was, you know, late afternoon. Like I said, I had this feeling I wasn't going to see any deer. Everything was just so dead quiet, you know, except for, you know, some birds that I'd hear every once in a while that just kind of sounded odd. But I just had a feeling that I wasn't, you know, I'm not going to see any deer. And just, so I was leaving, you know, this just, going home, you know, just kind of giving up. And, but yeah, it was in the afternoon, late afternoon.
And can you describe for people listening what you saw? Can you describe as best you can? I realize to you, this probably felt like a lifetime, but it was probably realistically seconds that went by. But can you describe what you saw and describe the face and describe basically what did you see?
Well, it had a face a lot. It looked like a lot like a chimpanzee, but the eyes, it didn't have the brown eyes. It had kind of a black eye, not kind of, they were black eyes, you know, and it had that protruded jaw and lip, you know, kind of stuck out there a little bit. And it had the eyebrow was real protruded, you know, it came out quite a bit with that big, hooked, flared nose, you know, I think they call it like a hooded nose. Extremely ugly. About the ugliest thing I'd ever seen in my life. And it had long hair on the head and hanging down on the shoulders and back, you know. But, then it was hair. It wasn't fur. It was long, you know, flowing hair. But yeah, the face looked a lot just a lot like a chimpanzee, but the body looked more like a man, you know. And I knew it was a male, you know, there was no doubt in that. You could just see the junk, you know, kind of swinging as it was moving. And that just really, it just blew my mind, you know. There was one detail that has always stuck out with me, and I don't know why. The inside of its nostrils were real pink. And I've often thought, why did I notice that, you know, more than any of the other facial features, you know, was that pink nose, the inside of the nose, you know, real wide mouth, black tongue, black inner mouth, white teeth. The teeth were, you know, Hollywood movie stars would probably pay for these teeth. You know, they were very, very clean white teeth, and that's a description of the face.
How,
you know,
how big would you say the mouth was?
It was probably 5-6 inches wide, real wide. You know, you could put a softball in this thing's mouth, and you could probably still, you know, still have room to move it around. Just a huge mouth. The proportions and the eyes were real big. The mouth was real big. The nose was actually kind of small, kind of flared out, hooded, you know, kind of hooked up. But it wasn't real big. The nose wasn't real big on the face.
Your description of the inner nose, that would make sense, especially with, you know, most primates when they get pissed, their nose flare. I mean, even we do it. You'll see guys that are... guys and gals, when they real piss, their nose kind of flares open.
Flares out, right?
Yeah,
I never thought of that, you know, of it, the nose flaring open. I just know that it was, you know, I could see, you know, right into it. You know, how our nose was kind of down. Well, you could see right in, you know, this thing's nose, you know, and it was real pink, and that just always stuck in my head is why I remember that. As a major detail, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've talked to a lot of hunters that say, you know, I don't know if I saw what you call a Bigfoot, but it was kind of a large chimpanzee out running around in the woods, you know, and I'm talking about like Missouri or Mississippi, and there's no chimpanzees that are out there running around. So I think it's unique that you gave it that description. Did it do any other vocalizations besides screaming at you?
No, just a scream. It screamed at me 2 times, and then it screamed at me when I first saw it, and then it screamed at me again at the truck, and then it screamed as it left the truck. And that wasn't like the other two, I'm pissed off. That was one like, oh shit, scream, you know, getting out of there, you know, cause I know I contacted with it. I know I hit it. But I think it glanced off the side of the head, and the eyebrow right there, it looked so thick it wouldn't have penetrated anyway. You know, even if I'd have probably hit him dead center between the eyes, I don't think that 22 Magnum would go through there. Cause I mean, it's massive. That eyebrow protrusion it probably comes out 1.5 to 2 inches. Not more, you know.
So when you hit it, you don't think you actually penetrated the skull?
No, I don't think it did. I think maybe it right over the outside of the left eye and maybe cut it, you know, cut him open right there. But I think it was just, you know, I think what did it was the fact of the pistol is what scared it. That and the firing it right in its face. But I think if I hadn't had that, I'd have probably been in a lot more trouble. I really do. I don't know what its intentions were, but I don't think that it would have came out. I would have came out as well as I did.
Yeah, the way it came at you was a little bit more than just a bluff charge. It's interesting, the moment you drop the rifle in the back of the truck, it gets the guts to come out and
right.
Face you.
Yeah, that's when it came back out, was after I put the rifle down and had dropped the keys. You know, I didn't have anything in my hands, you know, and that's when it came across the clearing, the right of the easement. That's when it came across, you know, to the truck.
Looking back, did you get the impression that it was alone?
You know, for the longest time I have, you know, I never ever thought that there was another one with it. But, you know, I don't know. It could have been another one that threw the rock at the top. But I don't know. I never had a feeling that there was more than one there. But there most certainly could have been. You know, I don't know. You mentioned that the other day, and it was just like, well, maybe. Yeah, there could have been. I have no idea.
Do you think you didn't tell your dad what you saw because you were in such shock? Or did you feel like he wouldn't believe you?
Well, yeah, I think I didn't know how he would take it. And I surely didn't want to raise any suspicion or make any, and I'm still trying to digest this myself, you know. And it was many years, actually, before I told him. It was like 3 or 4 years ago on Christmas when I told him about it. And the reason I did is my daughter was watching the Finding Bigfoot episode, and my dad was there, and he mentioned that he had seen, he was a truck driver, and he had seen a couple late one night on a road, you know, down in Louisiana or Mississippi or somewhere. And I was like, oh, well, okay, let me tell you, you know. And I told him some of what happened to me. You know, I think he believed me, but I think he, you know, the whole thing's just kind of, I never told him about shooting it. I told him about the rock, you know, and I think he kind of thought, well, that's kind of wild. So, and we never talked about it again. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I just didn't want, you know, any odd suspicion, you know, so I really didn't tell anybody. I told my daughter, a little bit of what happened. I haven't told her the whole thing, you know. I don't want to scare her or freak her out, you know, which it may not, I don't know, you know. So
yeah,
just kind of kept it to myself, you know. I don't know. It's really hard to explain, you know.
I understand completely what you're saying, you know. It's one of those things to where it hurts when, especially someone you love, you're not really sure how they're going to take it. And you know, it's,
right. Like my wife, I told my daughter about it. My wife, she gives me crap about it. You know, oh, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. I don't know why you're telling her this, you know, and because I don't want her wandering off out here, you know, if she sees something, you know, and end up being a victim. But, you know, my wife's like, oh, you're crazy. You know, those things don't exist, you know. And you're right, it does kind of hurt. You know, we've been married 30 years, you know, and why would I tell her something like this, you know? Well, it doesn't make any sense. But
I think the fact that you were by yourself, and it's something you and I talked about the other day, in your situation, I don't think that it was a display. I don't think it was a bluff charge. I think it meant business. It saw you put the weapon away, and you were easy pickings at that point. Until, you know, you pulled out your pistol, then all of a sudden you weren't easy pickings. But I think that you were by yourself. And so I think if you were with two or three guys, I don't think you would have ever seen it. I don't think it would have came out and approached
you. I don't either. Yeah, I really don't either. Now, you know, when that Finding Bigfoot show came on, it really kind of started stirring things up, you know. And so I started looking around, you know. Just mainly on the internet, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, they're everywhere, you know, these things aren't, you know, there's not just one or two here and there, they're everywhere. It really just kind of turned the light on, you know, in my head as to what was going on. But up until then, I didn't know. It was so far out of my realm of reality. And I think that's one reason I never really told anybody. Is because who the hell's going to believe this, you know? I'm not. You know, I still don't believe it. So, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you always go back and question yourself. You know, I think a lot of times people see the Patterson-Gimlin film, and they see the thing get up and walk away. It makes you wonder what would have happened that day if it would have just been Roger Patterson riding in there and not having that second rider, you know, not having Bob backing him up with the gun. And, you know, things might have turned around different. But I think a lot of times when people think of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, that's the image that they have of this gentle creature getting up and just casually walking away. And most encounters aren't like that. Most encounters, they may get up and walk away, but, you know, sometimes they don't, especially in situations like yours. They may not get up and walk away. And you weren't doing anything. You didn't pop off shots at it. You weren't, decided to focus on you. And I think you're right. I think if you wouldn't have had that pistol, you'd been in trouble.
Yeah.
I know after you have an encounter, sometimes you go back and you think about different situations that you're in. There was a time you were with your grandfather, and do you want to tell that story?
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't anything major, but I didn't think about it for many, many years, you know, as to what's going on. He used to take me hunting and fishing. He hunted and fished all the time, and I was, you know, his shadow for years. I think I was about five, maybe between five and seven, somewhere in there, and we were in the woods. And, he caught the odor of something. In fact, I got thinking, he asked me, did I smell that? And I didn't smell anything. And he said, okay, we gotta go. Come on, let's go. You know, and we just turned around and left. And it was really odd, you know, and it seems like he gave me some kind of neutral excuse or answer, you know, that's why we were leaving. And then later, you know, later in life, he tells me, you know, there's things out there that, you know, if you smell something, you get away from it. And it was just a real odd situation, you know, as a small child. And I never really put two and two together until, you know, a couple of years ago, as, you know, what he was probably talking about. He was raised on the Wyandotte Reservation up by Tulsa, and I believe it's up by Tulsa. And, he said they had to hunt and fish just to survive. He always told me there's things in the woods that you don't even want to know about. But he never really came out and said anything, you know, to anybody that I know of. You know, he never said anything to me other than that, you know, if you smell something or feel something, get out of there. Don't be hanging out and following things that you don't know what are, you know.
Yeah, and it's a good story to bring up because, you know, there's always those. I remember when you told me that the other day, I was thinking about when I was down in Texas and I was at the gas station and the guy said, well, you're not from around here, are you? And I said, no, I'm from Washington State. And he said, well, you're not staying overnight over in this area that was pretty close to where we were staying. And I said, yeah, we're going to stay there for the night. And he said, you don't want to stay there for the night. And I said, why is that? And he goes, there's things out here in this forest that are just better left alone. And trust me, you don't want to stay there for the night. And I said, things like Bigfoot or Sasquatch. And he looked up real dead serious at me. And he goes, yeah, things like that. Your grandfather was right on there, probably with the smell. In your encounter, I don't think you, when we spoke the other day, did you smell anything in your encounter?
No, I didn't smell anything. Not that I remember. You know, not that I can recall. I don't remember smelling anything. There was no odor that was emitted from this thing, you know, no stink or nothing. You hear, you know, a lot about people, you know, smell like a wet dog or rotten meat or something. I didn't smell anything. And he looked well groomed. That's something else that always kind of really caught me, his hair. It was hair, you know, off his head and his face. There wasn't much hair on his face, but it came down the side of his face. It was long, you know, and it looked well-groomed. Looked like he had been brushing his hair or so, you know, like a woman's, you know, how it looks after they've brushed it out. And I always thought that was really just kind of odd, you know, that a creature in the woods would have, you know, clean-looking hair.
But... When he was looking at you, did you see any of the whites to the eyes, or was it all black?
It was all black. There wasn't any whites. I mean, it was with this facial expression and the black eyes, it was like you were looking into the face of death, you know, and that's kind of what I got from it. You know, it was, this is the end. This is the last thing I'm going to see right here, you know, and I mean... just the eyes are black, just black as coal. There was no whites to the eyes.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that your description of people that I've talked to that have been in similar situations like yours where they're really up close and personal, and they usually do end up shooting it. One of the things they talk about is the mouth. You know, they'll say it had a kind of a black mouth, black tongue, and real dark, dark eyes. And the eyes, people who've had really close up encounters, I don't know that I've ever heard anyone say that they could see the whites of the eyes. I think most people just say they were just black. It was just completely black eyes. What color was a creature?
He was black, primarily black, kind of a grayish skin color. You know, you could plainly see the skin. Hair was black. Skin was, you know, gray.
In the area that you're at, that you live in now, I know you've heard things out on the property, and I know your daughter is interested in it. You know, and I think of your encounter. And before I say this about finding Bigfoot, like you and I were saying the other day, finding Bigfoot's really brought it to the forefront of giving it the attention to make people kind of look at this. But in the same breath, I think the way they go about it is probably going to end up getting someone killed someday. And I think your situation, and you think of being out there banging on trees, screaming and yelling, and I know like Matt Moneymaker says, he'll sleep out there, you know, under the stars, and he's more afraid of cougars than he is of Sasquatch. But a situation like yours makes you think twice about something like that. You know what I mean?
I'd say I'm more afraid of Sasquatch than cougars, to tell you the truth. I've seen quite a few cougars in the wild, and they've always left when I see them, you know, or they're on their way leaving. But I've only ever encountered this once, and it wasn't leaving. You know what I'm saying? You know, just the odds there to me. I think you're right. I think that hoopla on TV about it brought a light to it, but I think it's the wrong light. You know, I really do. And I think you're right. I think somebody's going to get seriously hurt. If it hadn't already happened, I just don't think that this is going to come out good at all, you know, with the way people are going. You know, we were talking the other day how you were telling me about a fellow that saw one and kind of followed it, you know, and then he realized and he saw the other one. And he backed out. But, you know, one of these Bigfoot, finding Bigfoot fans, they start following one, and then there's the other one, and, oh, looky there, there's another one. Oh, and then it's too late. You know, they don't back out. They keep following. I just don't think it's a good thing. I really don't.
Yeah, and it was one of those situations. That was on an old show. I can't remember if we had the gentleman on or not, but I know it was one of the early shows. And in that... Right. Particular situation that you're referring to for the audience, what had happened in this situation is a hunter had seen one on a trail, and it was kind of, it'd take a few steps, look back at him, take a few steps, look back at him. And so he started following it, and his first impression was it was the biggest chimpanzee he'd ever seen in his life. And he just was in shock and awe in what he was looking at, but he really wasn't terrified because he was armed to the teeth. And as he's walking towards it, at any time there was a gap between it and him, it would kind of slow down or it would kind of stop and kind of look back at him.
Right.
This went on for a while, and he noticed movement up on the left right above the trail, and another one was hiding behind a rock. It popped its head up to look, and then it ducked back down, and he recognized really quick he's being led into a trap. And so
these
a complete ambush. So, I mean, these things aren't stupid. And it just terrifies me to hear your encounter, and then you hear weird stories about people who have gone missing. There was one I posted up on the blog a few months ago, and there was this, I meant to tell you this the other day, it was a hunter, and this hunter went completely missing. They couldn't find this guy. And coincidentally, he was actually into Bigfoot too. But he had gone missing. They had searched everywhere for him, could never find the body. Finally, they found the body. In areas they'd already searched, he had died from trauma to his chest. And basically what they said was a branch had fallen from a tree, hit him in the chest and killed him. Well, the branch was about 5 feet from the body. He had no head injuries. It just doesn't add up. So it made me think probably this huge branch came flying out and probably hit him in the chest and either killed him or he was probably beaten to death. Just terrifying stuff, man. Just terrifying stuff.
Right. Yeah. I won't go in the woods alone now at all, ever, you know, and, like I reflect back to the football player in Michigan, you know, that was being accosted by one or two of them. And then I think they found him on a sandbar, miles away and days later, you know, he had called his wife on the cell phone and, said somebody was following him.
Yeah, he said two guys were following him. When they first came out, they said he had drowned, which made no sense because his body wasn't found in the water.
It was up on a sandbar or something, I think.
Yeah, I think it was up on a sandbar. But yeah, he had called his wife, and his wife said that, you know, he sounded scared and he sounded in panic and he just kept saying, these guys keep following me, and he calls out to them. And they never respond back, and he didn't know who was following him or why they were following him, and he was by himself too, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, you're right. My daughter, she's intrigued by it, you know, and she told me she'd seen one, here locally where we live, and I believe it was a juvenile. She said it was about 4 foot tall and was kind of behind a tree peeking at her. So I've tried to enlighten her as much as I can without scaring her, you know, because she's only 16, you know, and, you know, I don't want her going around the rest of her life thinking, you know, scared, you know, so it's kind of a fine line, you know, that I just try to tell her, you know, don't follow something. If you see something, get away from it. If you smell something, hear something, if it's something that sounds very odd, you know, just go to the house, you know. We have livestock. We have horses and goats and chickens and stuff out here where we're at. And, I was telling you the other day, I've never had one of my animals come up missing, but my neighbor, an eighth of a mile away, has. He's had a lot of stuff come up missing. But, and they're always complaining about driving past my house at night because I have floodlights all over the outside of the house and they're on. They're not motion lights. They're on. So, you know, I don't really have anything messed with around here. And I actually believe it's the light. I think they don't like to come out in the light.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think, you know, anytime you have a place that's lit up like yours, it's interesting. Your neighbors had a lot of animals come up missing, but you haven't, and you live relatively close, and you've heard
eighth of a mile, you know. So,
and you've heard weird things around your property, haven't you?
Oh yeah, lots of weird things. I think I was walking into an ambush out here one time, and I didn't realize what it was, that it was an ambush situation, but I did understand what it was that was making the noise. And I turned around and came back to the house. I heard a wood knock. I was walking, and we have trails. And, me and my daughter were out walking around, and I heard this knock. She was quite a ways away from me. But I hear this knock, tree knock, due east of me, 100 yards. And just 2 seconds after that, I hear this sick crow. The wildest, weirdest crow sound I'd ever heard in my life is something trying to imitate a crow. Due west of me. So I've got something due west of me, something due east of me, and I'm kind of heading south. And I turned around and headed back to the house and called my daughter, you know, let's go. We got to go home. And, you know, she, well, what? Did you see something? Did you hear something? No, no, no. We just need to get home, you know. And, but it was, the hair just stood up on the back of my neck when that happened. And it was, we got to go. We got to get out of here. She hears something call our dogs, you know, from the tree lines. From time to time, she'll be out feeding horses or something, and she'll hear a whistle. And then we have one dog, his name's Togo, and just two plain syllables. And she said it sounds like me calling the dogs from the woods. She said it'll whistle and say, Togo, you know. And, she comes in probably once a month and tells me about it. But yeah, we've seen and heard quite a bit around the property, but nothing's ever messed with us. And I actually think it's the lights that keep them away, You know, my advice to anybody, you know, if they're having problems, just turn on some lights and leave them on. I've got a double-headed floodlight at each corner of the house, and then a porch light on the front and the back. And they shine out pretty good ways in the woods. The dogs won't leave the light at night. You know, they stay within the perimeter of the light of the house. You know, you can always see them.
The lights really is good advice for anyone having problems on their property. And they do, they mimic. You know how many times I've heard that? They just mimic people. And I think there's been some confusion lately. I've heard a lot of different Bigfoot researchers say that they speak Native American or they speak. And I was speaking to talking to a Choctaw tribal member, and he just laughed. He said, they don't speak our language. Yeah. He goes, they mimic us just like they mimic anyone else. If you call for your dogs or if you, he goes, they don't speak our language. They're good at mimicking. And it was interesting because he brought up the crow thing too. He told me, you know, sometimes you don't hear the whoops. Sometimes you don't hear the chatter. Sometimes you don't hear the real off sounds. He goes, but what you will hear a lot of times is either an owl that sounds like a 1,000-pound owl going off.
Yeah.
Or you'll hear the most ridiculous crow sound you'll ever hear in your life, where you know it's not a crow. And he said a lot of times you'll hear them at weird times when crows aren't even out.
Right. That's exactly what we have here. I don't ever hear the late night howls or the whoops and stuff like that. We hear there's a lot of owl. And I was working on my truck, had the hood up on my truck here a couple of months ago. And it was just probably 15 minutes before dark. It was dusk. And in the tree line behind me, 50 yards away, I hear the cleanest, clearest, huge owl I'd ever heard in my life. And I grabbed my stuff, closed the hood, and went in the house, you know. It just shot chills right up my spine when I heard it. And because it was like, that's not an owl, you know. Just instinctively, you know, that is not what it's trying to tell you it is, you know. We sat on our porch one night, me, my son, my daughter-in-law, and watched four sets of red eyes in the tree line north of us for 2 hours, you know. It's a little over 100 yards away. And, you know, you see the eyes blink and the heads turn left and right, you know, and they were setting the kind up on the hill right in the tree line. And I went over the next day, and there was just guinea feathers everywhere, you know. And that night, my neighbor lost, I think, a half a dozen guineas, you know, out of his coop, you know, but they were all over there. Well, the feathers, and that's all that was left, was feathers, nothing but. You could see where something big had been sitting in the ivies, you know, in the weeds and underbrush. But yeah, we watched them for a long time, and they were looking at us across my wife's goat pen. My wife's goats were out there, and they were pretty much up against the house, but that was the pen that they were in, you know. So I don't know if they were sitting there watching goats, and we just happened to catch eye shine over there. And it was just 2 hours, I know. My daughter-in-law got a photo of it. It's not real clear, but you can see, she used her iPhone, but you can see the four sets of eyes. So I think we have an adult male, an adult female, and two juveniles. Actually, what I think we have around here.
Yeah, and that's interesting too. You know, if it was one set of eyes that you saw, it could have been anything. But, you know, most of the time predators don't hang around with each other like that and don't sit and watch something for 2.5 hours, sit and watch you. That's interesting. That's very, very. How far away were the eyes from you?
Oh, it was probably 75 to 100 yards, you know, and it's a clearing field all the way across to the wood line, and they were just inside the wood line on the north. We were looking across my wife's goat field, you know, at them, and there they were, you know, but we couldn't make out any shapes or anything. All you could really see was the eyes. There was two sets of eyes. It looked like a family portrait sitting, you know, is what it looked like. A slight hill that they were sitting on, and there was a set of eyes to the right, a set of eyes to the left, and then below it, there was a set of eyes to the right and a set of eyes to the left. You would think that you were sitting there looking at a picture of a family that had gone into a portrait studio and had a photo done. That was the position of these four eyes. And they were all right there within probably 10 foot of one another.
Yeah.
Just sitting there looking and eating guineas.
Yeah, sitting there eating guineas, yeah.
Having dinner, watching goats, and probably us, you know. It was a really odd night and strange.
Yeah, and the vocals, but, too, I think you and I talked about it. There was different areas out when I was with Bob Garrett and Tim Sermons and Mo and all those guys down there. You know, I learned so much being with those guys. And there's different areas down there. In one area, all you'll hear is whoops and screams and just weird vocals. And then there's another area to where you won't hear anything. And if you hear anything, you might hear an owl or you might hear like a crow. And they're obviously not an owl or a crow, but you won't hear the whoops. You won't hear you'll hear more the mimicking of animals. And I know in one area down there, they're not real vocal, but the ones that aren't real vocal down in this one area, they have no troubles being seen day or night. They'll come out, which is terrifying. But it's just interesting, different groups, how they'll vocalize. You know, you might get, you know, in your area where you're hearing weird crows, you're hearing weird, you know, your daughter's heard mimicking of you, but you don't hear a lot of whoops, you know?
Right. No, we don't. We don't have the howls, the whoops and all that stuff. But, you know, and I know they're here, and we really can't look for tracks because we're actually on the top ridge of a mountain, and it's all rock up here. You know, the ground is just solid. You know, you drive through the yard, you don't leave tracks, you know, because an inch under it, it's just sandstone. So there's no tracks. I've never seen a track up here. I've seen what they call spore, where, you know, something large just walked through the trees and the grass and moved it over, but no footprints, you know. I'll probably never see a footprint up here, but, you know, and I'm convinced they're here, and it's just a matter of vigilance, you know. If you know they're around you, you know, you just got to be vigilant, stay away from them the best you can.
A lot of the Native Americans, almost every Native American I've ever spoken to has said, if you see them, you hear them, or you smell them, turn around and walk away.
Get out.
Just get out of there. Yeah. Don't stick around.
My grandfather was a half Cherokee Indian, and that was his deal. You know, anything odd in the woods, leave. Just leave. You know, it's not worth what it is that you're going to see. You know, it's kind of the way you put it. We never really said anything. You know, I wish he had. I wish I'd asked him. You know, he's no longer with us, but that's just get away from him. Stay away from him.
Yeah.
You know, don't go around them. It is nothing but trouble.
It's too bad you can't take back things you can see, you know, unsee things you've seen, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. I really do, because I can't go camping now. I'll go fishing overnight if I'm with, you know, three or four guys, you know. I used to love being in the forest. I loved it. You know, there was nothing I wanted to do more. Now, I don't want to go out in the woods. And I'm not going to go alone.
And I can't blame you after the encounter that you had. You know, I really, it does ruin you. You know, the forest is supposed to be a peaceful place. It's supposed to be, you know, there's always predators you have to worry about out there. But these things are these things are different. Maybe it's because they're on a higher food chain of predators than what we are. You know, we think we go out with our guns and we're the biggest, baddest thing in the forest. You know, well, cougar, bring it on. I'll put a bullet in you. Bear, bring it on. I'll put a bullet in you. But these things, you know, it's like, so I can definitely understand that.
The bullet, you better have, to me, a bullet, you better have a high power 30 caliber minimum if you think you're going to drop it. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be big and it's got to be fast in order to kill this thing. Because the average stuff people carry in the woods for deer hunting, it ain't going to do it. I just don't think it will. 308 or bigger. You know, it just, they're not anything to toy with, that's for sure.
No, you're right. You know, even a 357, I've heard, won't penetrate a grizzly bear's skull. And you think 357, God, I could put a bullet through almost anything with a 357.
Right.
I've heard that it won't penetrate a grizzly bear's skull. So you're right. I mean, if you're going to be in a situation, thank God you had that handgun on you, though, man. Even though it wasn't a big caliber, it probably did save your life that day.
Yeah, I think it did. I really do. And now, if I do go in the woods with somebody, I do carry a gun. I carry a gun around my house. And it's not for people, you know. I'm not afraid of people. It's just there's stuff in them woods, you know, that I might have to confront. And so it's, you know, it, I don't know. It just ruined the whole hunting forest thing for me. I just don't like to do it. It makes me nervous, you know, just thinking about it, really.
I really want to thank you for coming on the show, and I want to thank you for sharing your story. You know, it's like you and I talked the other day. I really think this goes on more often than not, and a lot of people don't want to come forward and say, hey, this happened to me, and I shot it.
Right.
So I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your story and just coming forward with it.
Well, I appreciate it. Actually, Wes, I feel better now. You know, we talked the other day, and I'm talking again today, and I actually feel better about it. You know, I don't feel bottled up or something, you know, kind of relieved. It's kind of odd to say, but I do appreciate your show, man. I think what you're doing is really going to change the whole face of what's going on. You know, you got these goobers running around out here, you know, there's, I don't know how many different shows now, and they're all a bunch of, you know, barefoot hillbilly morons out here. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but
no,
man, you know, really, you're gonna, I don't know, but, just really makes you wonder, gosh.
Yeah.
They're gonna stumble into something some one time that they're gonna wish they had, you know. That's when the light's going to come on, that was a bad idea.
Yeah, and it only takes that one time for that to happen, you know, and you may end up paying a bigger price for it even one time than you're willing to.
Right. Okay. All right, Wes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, James. If you've had an encounter out there and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email, wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. I'd love to have you on the show. I would love to hear your encounter. And, you know, I think it helps us all when people come forward or are willing to come forward and talk about their encounter. And again, I'll guarantee anonymity if you, you know, want to remain anonymous talking about your encounter. Thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. I really appreciate it. Happy Monday. And I will see you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
my home.